Srimad Bhagavatam, Kesha 12, Chapter 2, The Symptoms of Kali Yuga, and we will read text 21. The great majority of the verses from now on have no purport, or at best, very short purports occasionally. Anyway, let's read this verse 21. Atate sham bhavishyante manamsi vishadam vaya vasudeva anga ragati punya ganda nilaspisha pora jana padanam vai hate shvakila dasyushu. After all the imposter kings have been killed, the residents of the cities and towns will feel the breezes carrying the most sacred fragrance of the sandalwood paste and other decorations of Lord Vasudeva, and their minds will thereby become transcendentally pure. Purport. Nothing can surpass the sublime experience of being dramatically rescued by a great hero who happens to be the Supreme Lord. The death of the demons at the end of Kali Yuga is accompanied by fragrant spiritual breezes, and thus the atmosphere becomes most enchanting. So it's just a short purport, but we can say a few words briefly about that. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Shimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tinamane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharani Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Vastutyadi Jitarani Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasudhi Gauravati Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Vajkabhacharityasjagripasindhubhyevacha Vajitanam bhavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namah. Yes. Yes, so this is a very interesting point which Prabhupada brings out from time to time in his writings and in his lectures, that in this material world, people are very inclined to become attracted to different types of outstanding people who really they're not ordinary, they're more qualified and do more wonderful things, and their characters, their personalities are more attractive and in different ways. So this is going on in material life. In a sense, you could call it hero worship. Hero worship. And we see, particularly in the literature, and particularly nowadays, in the movies, and maybe television, I don't know about television so much, but the movies, they're getting more and more into having more and more spectacular heroes. In my youth, it was, anyway, just some, you know, war hero or James Bond. But now, from what I've read, you get these comic characters, Superman, Batman, is it? You have Batman in movies? Anyway, in the movies, maybe. and other, you know, more spectacular even types of superheroes, and sometimes groups of superheroes, because people are looking, people are attracted. When you have a, well, I don't know exactly, but I can imagine that when you have a movie about Mr. Ordinary and his very ordinary life, how he gets up in the morning, has a cup of coffee, gets on the bus, goes to work, and does some, you know, not very interesting job. And for lunch he has some boring sandwiches. Who wants to watch a movie like that? Unless, you know, unless they bring out some psychological thing or, you know, some sort of twist. Some sort of twist. But if it was just what is typically going on, really, then who's going to be interested in that? So there has to be something atypical. And, you know, the more spectacular, dramatic, vivid, one can imagine at least, the more attractive it may be. When I was a child, I was about, what, I think about 9 or around that age. At school, we started reading, you know, in the class, C.S. Lewis, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. Are you familiar with that? Kuti, you're not. You're not. You've wasted 25% of your life. So we read that book, and it's literally about going into another world. They go into a wardrobe, these children. They go into a wardrobe, and there's all these clothes, and they go through the clothes, and through the clothes, and suddenly they're in another world. And I remember trying it out myself to see what happened. Didn't work. But it was so attractive that I remember as a little boy being so incredibly attracted by it that I had to have the book. And my parents couldn't find the book. And I cried. A confession. So, you know, welcome to the little worlds, the little world of little children. But the thing is, like we said, if it's just a matter of some movie or book or some something presentation about what actually happens, that I got up, I went to work, and I worked, and I had lunch, I came home, I sat in front of the TV, and there was some stupid program on, and I fell asleep in front of the TV. If you make a movie about that, or a book or something, it's not going to be attractive. Because life, actually, generally, life on the material platform is just, well, it's just very ordinary. So in order to really attract people, stimulate people, because the idea, after all, is to sell many books, so you must make a book which is really dynamic and attractive. And if it's a movie or whatever it is, you got to do it like that in order to for people to want to buy it, and then you get your money. So, so the fact is that material life is generally it's very ordinary and very unattractive. And so in order to stimulate people and get their support and buy in, you have to present something quite extraordinary. So, but the thing is that what people are really looking for, that person, that hero who will really stimulate them, that's Krishna. They have to just fantasize and make up some fantasy Superman. He's just a fantasy. There is no Superman. But Krishna, he's really like that. So when people are looking for heroes, when people are looking for heroes, they're looking for Krishna because he's really heroic. When people are looking for a love story, then the best love story is the love story of Radha and Krishna. But on the material level, people become attracted by some other ordinary love story, Romeo and Juliet, Twilight, am I right? And I'm not up with it so much at all, but I've heard about these things. And people then become moved that, oh, love story, how wonderful. His Grace Sundarlal Prabhu Ki Jai. Right. But the real love story is there between Radha and Krishna. You get the love stories in the material world, like Romeo and Juliet. But it ends in tragedy. And any love story must end in tragedy. You know, at the very least, they will die. At the very least. But in the meantime, some other things may happen too. In their youth, they may think they're just wonderful. This is the girl of my dreams. An angel has descended into my life. And my life is just perfect now. Or some superhero has entered my life. But after a little while, they realize, hey, he's just an ordinary guy. And she, you know, she's got problems. As many as me, or more. And she, it's a disappointment. Material life ends in disappointment. Because even if they are relatively happy together and, you know, make it through their whole lives, then they die. And that's the biggest letdown of all. Yes. So really what people are looking for is Krishna. And Srila Prabhupada told a famous story, I'm sure. I imagine you've all heard it before, perhaps even many times, of the man who at night drove into his garage. And there was no light in the garage. And he got out of his car and dropped the keys. But it was completely dark in the garage. And he couldn't find the keys. Then he looked outside on the road, just by the front of his driveway, there was a street light, which was illuminating the area around it itself nicely. So he went out there and started looking there. And his friend came by and said, oh, what happened? You're looking for something. Yeah, dropped my keys, lost my keys. Where? Where'd you drop them? Oh, up there in the garage. Well, why are you looking here? Because here there's light. So people are looking in the wrong place. In a sense, they're looking, well, it depends. But they may be looking for the right thing in a certain sense. A great hero. Someone who will look after them. Protect them. So this is nice. At least these types of things are nice. But they're not to be found on the material level amongst within material society, amongst the material people. You get some people who are, you know, a little, of course, more than your average, but you don't get people like Krishna. That's something else. Hari Sori Prabhu was telling us how he was on a plane with Srila Prabhupada, and they were in the front row, and there was the movie screen just right in front of them, and they were playing a David Niven movie, World War II action. Did you ever hear of David Niven? No. Now you wasted 50%. He was a super action hero from my youth.
The one who was just right, possibly?
I don't know.
That's someone else.
Yeah, David Niven, yeah. He was mainly in World War II movies. So anyway, there's Prabhupada and Hari Sori, and it's just right in front of them, and they're sitting there. And Prabhupada's looking, and then Prabhupada fell asleep. And then Prabhupada woke up, and there's David Niven running up the hill, and he gets shot. Then he gets up again, and he's running up, and he gets shot again. Down he goes, but then he gets up and he's running out, and Prabhupada fell asleep again. And Prabhupada woke up, you know, just very shortly after, and there's David Niven, he's still running up the hill, and he gets shot again on the ground. And then he gets up again and he's running out, and Prabhupada said, "Oh, not dead yet." It's just such a classic. Not dead yet. Of course not, because he's the hero. He's David Niven. He's winning the war against the bad guys. So, yes. So, but Prabhupada mentions, well, in Nectar of Devotion, actually, there's the description of how Lord Krishna, Balaram, they fought against Jarasandha on many occasions. And Prabhupada is describing there in Nectar of Devotion how one time, at least one of the times, there was Krishna and there was Balaram, and they had maybe 100 soldiers, just a relatively small group, fighting against Jarasandha, who had, you know, 1 million soldiers or some, you know, vast number. And Krishna, Balaram, and their small group, they killed all the opposing soldiers. Killed them all. And amongst Krishna's army, Not one was killed. In fact, not one even got a scratch. And Prabhupada says, this is unprecedented in military history. Which again, you know, Prabhupada had such a way of putting things. So if you want heroism, here it's describing Kalki, who's just going around, and you're familiar with this picture. There's Kalki on the horse, and there's just, you know, hundreds and loads of warriors, demoniac warriors, and he's just wiping them out. He's just wiping them out. So that's a hero. That's a real superhero. Who needs Superman when you have Krishna? And that's actually how it should be. That in our constitutional position, we, each one of us, has an eternal relationship with Krishna, in which Krishna is our everything. He is our protector. He is our beloved. He is our master. And he is just everything to us. But then we come into material existence. Somehow we become envious of Krishna. We come into material existence, and there's no more Krishna to be the protector, to be the friend, the faultless friend, the perfect friend, perfect protector, and to perfectly love us, and to whom we can perfectly express our love. He's gone when you're in material existence. But still, internally, the drives, the needs, the internal impetuses for those things, for those types of people playing those roles in our lives, those needs are still there. And material existence means we try to find those things which are only available with Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan. We try to find those things amongst just ordinary people within this very difficult material world. And this is a great recipe for failure. Just a perfect, the only perfect thing about it is a perfect recipe for failure. One devotee, I think it was Sridhar Maharaj, was talking to us about paradigms. Paradigm meaning a basic type of understanding, really, of what is reality. And how sometimes you have to make a paradigm shift because your conception of reality is not correct and it's maybe extremely wrong. And when you've got the wrong paradigm, then it doesn't matter how enthusiastic you are, how determined you are, how even intelligent you are, creative you are. If you have the wrong paradigm, you'll fail. And he gave two examples. One is, you are in big city. Well, let's say Port Louis, it's not very big, but anyway, you know, it's something. And you need to find a place. So you get a map. Very good. But actually, you get a map of Katrabong. And now you're going to try and find the place. So there you are, you know. Am I holding it the wrong way up? Or why am I not finding it? And then you think, don't worry. Let's just be determined. We will not let failure, you know, like, reduce our enthusiasm. We will just keep going. But if you've got the wrong map, you're not going to find a place. Doesn't matter how enthusiastic you are. Another one, example he gave is a very good one, which you may have heard. The admiral, the big naval chief, is on the battleship with, surrounded by the other naval ships. They're steaming across the ocean. And suddenly on the radar, directly in front of them, they see a blip. Something is there. Blip, blip, something's there. Right in front of them. So they radio. Yes, dear such and such, please move your ship. Please move your boat. And the voice comes back, no, you move your boat. And so the admiral sends a message back, listen, we are the Navy, the Seventh Fleet. Move your boat. And the voice comes back, no, you move your boat. And then he sends a message, I am Admiral such and such. This is a battleship. Move your boat. And the voice comes back, I am, private seaman, means bottom rank, such and such. Move your boat. Anyway, it goes like this. And the admiral is insisting, we will court-martial you. Move your boat. And the message comes back, I am a lighthouse. Move your boat. So, time for a paradigm shift. Yeah. So in material existence, people need a paradigm shift. They have this basic paradigm, the basic conception. There is me. I am an enjoyer. There is this world. It is for me. It is to be enjoyed by me. And there are various other people. And they are to help me in my enjoyment. And this is the paradigm, basically. So, but the paradigm is wrong. That basic conception of reality is wrong. And if you pursue it, if you live according to that paradigm, you're simply going to fail completely. And ultimately you'll die. So there's a need for a paradigm shift, and this is Krishna consciousness. That I'm not the enjoyer, I am the servant. Krishna is the enjoyer. And yes, everything on the material level is temporary. I should not have high expectations of anything or anyone on the material level. And so on like this. So this sort of paradigm shift is essential. And the Lord is such, so outstanding. Just consider what's said here. That the Lord, what to speak of being just a big hero who can kill everybody who gets in his way and protect us against just anything. But he is so wonderful. His body is so fragrant. Our bodies are prone to produce fragrances of their own. You may have noticed. They're not so nice. But the Lord, the fragrance of the Lord's body is just so, first of all, so beautiful. So, just so amazingly nice. On one hand, but on the other hand, of a spiritual nature that whoever was not killed smelt that fragrance. And not only was it like, you know, wow, amazing fragrance, but it purified them. And they gave up, they stopped being demons and became devotees just by smelling the fragrance. And from this we get an idea how outstanding the Lord is. That, you know, his fragrance is so incredibly outstanding. And what to speak of the rest of him? His beauty, his personality, his emotions, the way he conducts himself in relationships. It's just, in principle, the same. Meaning just unique, unparalleled. And nothing is even close to paralleling. So this is Kalki. But don't stay around to see him. Go back to Godhead before that. Because in the meantime, there's going to be a lot of difficulty. So let's just become Krishna conscious, go back to Godhead at the end of this life, and be with Krishna. And that'll be very nice. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
First of all, I'd like to say that there's one film that they have produced called Avatar. Avatar.
I heard about it.
Yes, and lots of points could be seen that it's taken from the Vedic point of view, like the heroism and the chivalrous character of the actors flying, they can just jump here and there, you know, just like Hanuman. So, my question is, like for example, nowadays we have lots of war also over the world,
sure.
But we also had it in a Vedic time. So whatever we are seeing, what is happening, was already existed also before. But if the love of God is our only goal of life, why would the Krishna or the Vedic literatures exhibit all these kind of things?
You mean things like wars?
Yeah, wars and whatever is happening, my understanding, that already existed also during Vedic time.
Well, yes. But not like today. You know, at the time of Krishna, there was Kamsa and his associates. But then Krishna destroyed them. And then Maharaj Yudhisthira ruled. And it was wonderful. Then there wasn't war. And Maharaj Parikshit. Then there wasn't war. It was just occasionally in those days, in real Vedic times. Ravan was there. But Lord Ram killed Ravan, and then there was complete peace for thousands of years. And everyone was completely happy. But particularly in Kali Yuga, these things become just every day. Every day. And, you know, I read a little that sometimes in these soccer matches, the supporters become, you know, so belligerent and angry. It's almost like a war. I mean, sometimes it is. Sometimes they actually attack each other. We would go on Harinam in London on Saturday, every Saturday night. And sometimes you'd get some football, whatever, hooligans. And, you know, they just sort of invade the whole area. And we would have to take some diversionary sort of mood. So, you know, even in sport, which is meant to be, you know, good for the health and relaxation and, you know, something nice. But the quarrelsome nature of Kali Yuga is so strong, it pervades that. So, yeah, in Kali Yuga these things are much, much worse. Although in previous ages, sometimes you get these things. But only occasionally. Am I answering your question?
Yeah. Like also, for example, the first time that the Vedic literature was revealed to the Kshatriya, like Arjuna, in the battlefield of Kurukshetra, and the war was inevitable also.
Right.
So, of course, this was completely orchestrated so that Arjuna would get the message.
Yes.
For the benefit of the people.
Yes. But it wasn't that those wars, like Battle of Kurukshetra, were happening all the time, like today. You know, there's numerous wars going on right now at this minute. But in Krishna's time, you didn't have that, like this proliferation of wars. But you get them sometimes. Is that okay?
Raj, we also say that the wars of today, and the wars that took place in the Vedic times, the way in which the wars were fought in those times are different.
Right.
Because they observed at least the Vedic etiquette.
Yes, you know, sure.
They started war at a certain time, ended at a certain time.
Generally,
and
then
at night time, you know, they would eat with each other.
Right.
And then fight the next day.
That's true.
You know.
And, you know, Now we have atomic bombs and bombs in general, and missiles and planes. And they used to fight with swords. And so some people say, well, look at them, they're primitive. They just fight with swords. But now we're more advanced because we have guns and all these other things. But the thing is, in Vedic times, they had sophisticated weaponry also. Powered by mantra, like what was it? The
Brahmastra.
Brahmastra. It's, you know, initiated or whatever, released by mantra. So why, if they were so sophisticated, why did they just fight with swords? Because they were Kshatriyas, and when you're, you know, hand to hand with another warrior, it's a real test of who is the better warrior. Now, you know, you can hide and shoot someone 100, 200 meters away, whatever it is. And where's the heroism? Where's the warrior nature? Shoot children, you know, people who are not even part of the conflict. But there... You know, it wasn't that they were primitive and all they could come up with in the way of weaponry was swords. And you have to get right there with the person before you can possibly kill them. But it was all part of the warrior spirit, that we're actually fighting with each other and we're contesting to see who is the better warrior. But even, I think, during the Battle of Kurukshetra, at a certain point, things got so hectic that they were fighting during the night and doing, you know, it's kind of like heavy maneuvers because they just got so much into it. But otherwise, in general, they were very chivalrous, very honorable, and so on.
The point I wanted to make, Maharaj, mm-hmm. even if it is a religious war,
yeah,
and they were fighting according to the instructions, so if love of God is our only aim of life, so why do these things?
Why? Yeah. Well, love of God is our goal of life, but we're living in the material world. And particularly those who are kshatriyas, they have to perform their kshatriya duty. So Arjuna fought for Krishna. Of course, he was a pure devotee already, but others who weren't, but they're devotees, they would have been fighting for Krishna to develop love for Krishna. Like the Vaishyas, they were raising animals, doing agriculture, in order to develop love for Krishna. So that duty of whatever the varna is, or whatever the ashram is, the duties they perform, they're all to be performed so one develops love for Krishna. They're meant to be done for his pleasure. And by dedicating oneself to pleasing him, gradually the mood of love develops. Srila Prabhupada ki. Hare Krishna.